I'll go ahead and kick this off. About 9 months ago, there was a notion about addressing the workload regarding indigent defense, and a proposal was discussed. And as a result of maybe some discussion regarding that, the pros and cons of it, a work group was formed. And that work group met for four and a half times. And this is the result of that work group with a lot of thought and effort, a lot of information collected. And I'm going to turn it over to Anne, who will go through the PowerPoint and also introduce the people that participated in the work. So,
thank you. Anne Christian with General Services, and I first want to thank Jim. He attended every single meeting of the work group and was very helpful as far as helping the work group reach a consensus. So what we want to do this morning is you have five members of the work group before you. One person is ill. She planned to be here, and two other members will be present. But the five of us are going to walk you through the PowerPoint rather than one person just going through the PowerPoint. But before we start, we just want to give a quick intro to the other work group members and a little bit of their sense from the work group meetings. Judge Nichols.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm Judge Nichols, retired, fortunately. Served about 20 years on the bench, and I was the nominal chair of this person, which broke my string of never being a chairman of any committee for 20 years. Maybe the reason I would never want to be part of a committee would have me as the chair. But I want to thank you for the time and the opportunity that you have given us, and to provide you for the results of our work group and providing justice and compliance with the needs of the indigent defense in Clark County. Also, I want to thank Jim for his stewardship and keeping me in online and in track and having let me have half his apple one time during the lunch meeting.
I gave away a sandwich also. That's the least we can do for all the hard work they put in.
So we did serve with some type of enumeration there. The work group composed of Ann as the coordinator, some defense and civil attorneys, and two retired judges. It was a diverse group with diverse opinions. There was heated arguments, heated discussions. Fortunately, no one was held in contempt. The purpose of the work group was twofold. The first was addressing a crisis that developed during the latter part of the year in September, October, in which we had too many defendants and too few indigent defense attorneys to take care of their needs. Why did we have a low number of attorneys? A lot of it had to do with attrition, retirement, inability to get new attorneys online, mostly due to the fact that they weren't being compensated at a rate or any increase in the compensation for over 10 years. So it was hard to recruit new members. Faced with this crisis, we basically tried to approach a Band-Aid on a very serious problem. The second concern was what to do in the future to avoid such a crisis. So we went from posing a Band-Aid to more like major surgery, because this was a revamping of the entire indigent defense that we hadn't done in 30 years, I would think, something along those lines. Again, with the help of David Carroll from the Sixth Amendment Center back east, he came out and gave us some valuable time, donated that, and came up with some really good ideas based on his idea of combining public defender's office with the contract attorneys that we now have. We came to a consensus that that was the type of model that we wanted to use as being the most efficient way of doing so. The metaphor I'd like to use is that we were faced with a crisis of a car breaking down on the freeway. We were able to change the tires, get a jump start, and limp home. Now, looking at a new model, we had to come up with basically a new car. And so we came up with a new car, and the good news is a hybrid. a combination of the efficiency of a public defender's office with the performance of the contract attorneys. And the contract attorneys forming about 45% of the workload, and the public defenders 55%. So our purpose today is to explain the features of this new model and to tell you what's going to take to get you into a new car. Thank you.
Great.
Well, I'm Barbara Johnson, and I know some of you for a long time. Oh, sorry. I'm Barbara Johnson. I've known some of you for quite some time, some of you not so much. I served 28 years on the Superior Court here, and as far as criminal law, before that, I was both a prosecutor and a defense attorney over my career prior to taking the bench, so have had experience all around. And during the last 7+ years of my service on the Superior Court, I was the presiding judge, so I had occasion to come before what was then the Board of Commissioners. I've already made one error this morning in using commissioner instead of counselor, so I apologize if I do that again. But at that time, I would be advocating on behalf of budgets and so on. I happened to take over that position at the time when the budget had the housing crisis and so on. There was a great shortage of money, so it was not good timing. But now advocating on behalf of this work, I think, is really part of the same system, which is really our system of justice in the United States. It is an adversary system that is based. We inherited it from the Brits, no Whigs, but other than that, their system of justice was spread around the globe with their various colonies. And the adversary system is based on the idea that you have two sides that will present to the court and be well qualified, well prepared, well funded, and that ultimately you'll achieve justice. So I think that it's very important that this issue of indigent defense and what's needed for indigent defense as Clark County is very important. So I'm pleased to be a part of this committee, which was extremely constructive experience. So you'll hear more.
And I'll just give a quick background for myself. I've spent 24 years administering public defense systems, public defense being the same as indigent defense. For 15 years, I administered the Oregon program, as you know. That's a statewide, 100% state-funded indigent defense system. And then for the past 9 years, I've been trying to administer the indigent defense program here in Clark County. Heather.
Good morning, members of the council. I wanted to thank you all for giving us this time to share what we've talked about and kind of what the conclusions that we've came to. My name is Heather Carroll. I graduated from UW Law School in 2005. I was at the Snohomish County Public Defender's Office from 2006 to 2012. I started as a contract attorney here in Clark County in 2013, and I've had a contract since then, so I'm going into my sixth year. The majority of my practice is representing indigent people in Superior Court. And the vast majority of people charged with crimes in Superior Court are indigent. I'm also a board member of the Washington Defender Association, which is a statewide organization dedicated to supporting public defense and public defenders. I wanted to devote my introductory remarks to kind of why the public defense part of this proposal. Why are we recommending that half of these cases be covered in a public defense office? And I think one of the main reasons is that it, helps to address some of the problems that Judge Nichols talked about earlier, which is attracting, training, and retaining qualified attorneys. So first of all, training, as contract attorneys, retire or leave for other areas of the law, how are we replacing them now? And right now, a lot of the newer people we're getting are coming from other counties. attorneys. You know, I came from another county. Mr. Downs, who's a contract attorney, came from Spokane. Or, you know, there are people who were brought into criminal defense by their parents. A number of attorneys in town that came in that way. You know, but we are a big county. We're getting bigger, and that is not a sustainable model going forward. There's four law schools within 3 hours of Vancouver. You know, there is a pool of talent out there that we could tap into. And training not just attorneys, but investigators and social workers and the other people who are integral to providing adequate criminal defense. So getting those people, training them up in a structured office, and, you know, offering training not just for people in the office, but for other people. We get kind of isolated here in Southwest Washington. You know, we're close to Portland, but that's, you know, a different practice. You know, so a lot of the trainings are held in Spokane or Seattle, which is a little far from people's growth. Also retaining current attorneys. So not only are we losing people because they are retiring, but also to other areas of the law, to family law, to PI, or to exclusively private representation for the reasons that Judge Nichols talked about, which is compensation. If you know you want to do exclusively public defense, if that's what you are passionate about, it is not economically sustainable under our system. And a public defense office will, you know, allow people who want to make that their exclusive work fair wages and adequate benefits. You know, aside from addressing those shortcomings, will a public defense office help us as a county do better? And I think we will. It would. You know, it would allow for one point of contact for issues. You know, if judges are having consistent issues, if the prosecutor's having consistent issues, you know, it allows one point of contact to address those. And also, I think the county is, and this is kind of more my personal perspective, the county is losing out on an important institutional voice by not having, you know, a public defense perspective at the table for county discussions. And a couple of specific examples. You know, one, there's a great Frontline documentary called Chasing Heroin, and part of that talks about, it's from 2016, talks about the LEAD program in Seattle, which is a law enforcement assisted diversion, which is a pre-booking diversion program aimed at kind of connecting low-level drug and prostitution offenders with services. And that was started as a joint effort between, you know, prosecutor's office and public defense office. The True Blood case out of Snohomish County, that is a federal injunctive case addressing delays in services for mentally incompetent people. A lot of that work was done by the Disability Rights Washington, but it was instigated out of Snohomish County Public Defender's Office. Ms. True Blood's an attorney there. Bail reform issues, you know, I've heard a number of judges mention the bail reform article that was in the Columbian the weekend before last. You know, people who work in the public defense community are aware of those issues. The WDA conference last year was focused on bail reform issues. And finally, you know, the jail, this is a huge issue before the county right now, is this jail. And I don't know that there has been a defense perspective in that discussion about, you know, what do we do with the jail? And I don't
think the committee.
And I don't think it's an intentional oversight, but I think it's, you know, who do you call? We have 40 individual contract attorneys.
Right.
You know, there is not, you know, one person that we're like, okay, we'll call them. So I think you're not getting a perspective, you know, who are we incarcerating? Why are we incarcerating? Are there ways that we could approach the issue differently? So I'll wrap that up so we can get to the rest of it, but I just wanted to thank you again for allowing us to have this important discussion. Ms. LaValle.
Thank you. My name is Therese LaValle. I'm in private practice here, and I'm also on the contract. I would also like to thank all of you very much for entertaining this proposal and for giving us the opportunity to provide you with some important ideas. Also, I'd very much like to thank Judge Nichols and Judge Johnson and Workminster, Karen Campbell, Sean Boger, and Tom Phelan, who were the other attorneys that were on the committee. I am here from a perspective of a contract attorney. I am very much in favor of this hybrid proposal that we are making to you this morning. I think that individual private contractors do provide a lot to the community for several reasons. There will always be a need to have private individual contractors because of conflict cases. The model that has been proposed to you maintains a good number of private contractors who will continue to provide an important service to the criminal justice system here. But I'm also in favor of having the creation of a public defender's office for many of the reasons that Heather just stated. It does provide an institutional mechanism that defense attorneys can be heard with individual contractors that were often individuals, individual fish swimming in the sea instead of one mass school. However, private contractors, as I stated, will continue to be necessary, but part of the reason that we're here is because of a significant deficit in bringing the pay scale of private contractors with parity with the rest of the criminal justice system. And so I felt it was necessary, along with a few of the other private attorneys in the committee, to have a voice with regard to bringing the pay scale up for individual private contractors. And we'll get into that more as we go through the PowerPoint. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we turn to the PowerPoint. The agenda for today is as indicated. I think we've kind of covered most of what we're going to talk about today, and the final one would be any type of feedback or guidance you can give us with regard to this new car. The work group, the short term is what I described as the Band-Aid situation. We're in a crisis, not enough attorneys. We had to come together, and Ann did a great job of gathering the troops and to handle that. If you think about it, what's going to happen if we didn't have enough attorneys to represent those that are entitled to them? One of the long-term situations we have to look at is being sued for not doing our compliance with that. Thank you. The long-term, as I indicated, is our prognosis and treatment that we want to have to looking toward the future so to avoid this type of crisis in the long term. And again, it's a very difficult situation that we have, but we have to come back with a new solution to it. The work group in the meetings, we had four meetings, and frankly, at the beginning of these meetings, with the divergent attitudes that we had people that were attorneys that had been longtime contract attorneys, dating back to the days of Tom Lodge and the disbanding of the Public Defender's Office. So we went with the contract procedure, and those people have a stake in this. They rely upon this income, this work for their remuneration, and it was hard to get off that. On the other hand, we have people that wanted to have a full-time, big, massive public defender's office. So I'll tell you, at the beginning of the first meeting, I was not too optimistic, and my level of optimism is always low. So I was not very optimistic. The October meeting, I think, was kind of a breakthrough that we had that meeting, as I indicated, with David Carroll, who was very good and very astute as to what is the best working model to have. Throughout the process, one of the prevailing mandates that I focused on was that the funding of the contract attorneys, it has just been abysmal that we have not had any type of significant compensation for over 10 years. So any type of quid pro quo had to include compensation for those attorneys. So it'd be commensurate with the rest of the state and commensurate with the staffing also with regard to that. The next meeting was in December. And at this point, I think that Jim finally was frustrated, so he had to go to high-tech result. So he brought out the grease board. And we put down plan A, B, C, and C plus, I think, was the ones that we had. Things got so high tech that we took snapshots of the grease board so we can remember what happened. So, but we did come to a conclusion in February. I think all of us finally got on board, and after, again, quid pro quo, we came up with, I think, as a very workable model. I think you'll enjoy it. I think that Ann will address some of the nuts and bolts of it. But the result of all this, of all of us working together, I think we have a very good solution to this problem.
Thank you, Judge Nichols. And during the course of our meetings, and there was interaction in between meetings as well, the work group looked at historical Clark County information. Mm. That was our first meeting, and then we looked at structure and other cost information from other counties in Washington State. We looked at historical Clark County felony compensation, and by the way, today we're only talking about one component of the indigent defense system in here or any in this county or any place else, just the felonies, the most serious cases. We looked at local. Clark County adopted, the Superior Court adopted standards for indigent defense attorneys back in 2002. We looked at those. We looked at state standards. We looked at other guidelines, many of which have come out of the Washington State Bar Association. And as has been mentioned, we sought national guidance, and that national guidance, Judge Johnson will get into a little bit more, with regard to David Carroll, who the chair was able to sit in during the time that Mr. Carroll was here. So historically, Clark County had a public defender from 1972 to 1980. And what a public defender means is full-time attorneys working on public defense. They're exclusively working on public defense cases. They can't take that occasional divorce case where a client may want some help in a divorce or any other cases. So Clark County's public defender here until 1980 was what is called, it's a nonprofit, it's not county employee public defender. And there's no, at least in my experience, there's no per se a nonprofit is better than a county employee system or vice versa. And then from 1980 to present day, Clark County has relied on 100% contracts or private bar lists. So I want to just circle back. There was some mention of the Spangenberg Group. They no longer exist, but that is a national group that the then Board of County Councilors sought out to do a review of indigent defense back in 2002 here in Clark County. And I'm happy to provide that report. For me, it's interesting to read because the Spangenberg Group were in Oregon a couple of times when I was there. And it's that report gives a good idea of where Clark County was in 2002, some progress that has been made since then, and what the recommendations of that national group were back in 2002. And we just wanted to highlight, since we're here indicating that the work group did reach a consensus with a recommendation to the council, highlight two things from that Spangenberg report back in 2002. It was the then prosecuting attorney, Art Curtis. This is a quote from that report. Art Curtis praised the quality of the original public defender office and has publicly expressed his view that, and this was in 2002, publicly expressed his view that reestablishing a public defender system is in the best interests of the indigent defendants, so the clients of Heather, Therese, and others. And then with regard to the current system, this is what the Spangenberg Group said. We were struck by the support for a public defender office. We heard from a number of the attorneys who were described to us as the best lawyers in the county. Many of these lawyers currently have contracts. Still, they told us the right thing to do is to have a public defender office, even if it means losing their contract work. Frankly, if Clark County were to pay contract attorneys fees that are more reflective of current criminal practice and the cost of the law practice, it would quite likely be more costly than a public defender program. So that was back in 2002, and we continue to have discussions like the work group has had with regard to how to best provide representation in these most serious criminal cases. The next screen is just showing you the historical flat fees that have been paid to felony contractors since 1980. And I know this information only because one of our long-term contractors, Jeff Souter, maintained boxes of information I was able to go through when I first came to Clark County. And from that information, I was able to create a record of the compensation for at least felony contractors here in Clark County. What this shows you is five-year increments until we get to 2007. And 2007 was the first year that the county had an indigent defense coordinator. Prior to that time, the judges and the purchasing department here in Clark County were responsible for soliciting and awarding contracts. So in 2007, the flat fee for a contract attorney was $700. And then that is the point where there was some adjustments made to account for the more serious cases. In 2009, there was an increase from $700 to $800 per case. So a case comes up at the courthouse and the attorney would be guaranteed $800 compensation for that case. And that $800 base rate has continued to this day. And some would say, why hasn't that amount been increased? And I want to be front and center that none of my requests, since I've been here 9 years, for decision packages have been for felony compensation increase. And the reason is not that that isn't well-deserved for the attorneys, but when I came here, there were greater needs that needed to be addressed. One quick example is the compensation and the workloads of the attorneys who handle misdemeanors in district court. Those attorneys individually were handling caseloads of 600 to 650 cases per year. So that's where my initial energy went, and other energy went to trying to secure an adequate budget for a biennium, which I appreciate happening this biennium.
Hey, Ann, from 2000 to 2005 jumped. Was that because of that report, commissioners? Or?
I don't know.
Okay.
But one might suspect that.
Okay.
I don't know factually whether that was the case. So, Heather.
So, this next slide kind of looks at Washington State and the counties and how they handle public defense in their counties. And the takeaway, I think, that we took from this slide was the move away from a contractor system, especially among the larger counties, toward a public defender system. The top slide shows 2005, how each county handled it. The white ones are contract public defense systems. The pink ones are public defense coordinators. That's essentially the same as a contract system. All the providers are contractors. They just have one person like Ann who manages those contracts. And if you look at 2016, there's just a large increase in public defender agencies in the larger counties. If you go to the next one. So this focuses on the counties over 100,000 in population and how they handle it. And if you look, we are the only county over 100,000 population that has a contract system. And I wanted to focus on the kind of cost spending per capita, and these are numbers that come from the Washington State Office of Public Defense. So if you look at kind of the top five or six counties, you know, Clark County is spending $11.79 per capita on indigent defense. Snohomish, if you look at most of the other counties, it's somewhere, you know, $17 to $26. I think probably $20 would be a good average. Snohomish County is an outlier in that this table shows $10.16 per capita. However, if you look at the filings, so they have about the same number of felony filings as Clark County does. Their population is, you know, 65% larger than ours. So the difference in cost is coming from, you know, a policy choice that they have made to, mm-hmm. to file less cases, right? And if you file less cases, it's going to cost less to provide adequate defense for those people. The difference in price, I haven't seen any evidence that Clark County is spending less money because it costs less to defend cases here. I think this number is reflective that, you know, we're shifting, as a county, we're shifting the cost of indigent defense onto the individual contractors, right? That they are, you know, earning less money, supplying paper, supplying ink, you know, those kinds of things.
Do we have any data on the cost? I know cases are all different, but do we have any data on the cost of a felony case? I know that's a broad question, so...
No, I don't. Okay. I mean, I guess all I could point you to is, you know, what other counties are paying per capita for a felony case.
And I'll just quickly interject. The work group looked a little, we had information with regard to hourly rates that are paid by other counties in, say, murder cases compared to Clark County. So we did review some data that we were able to get from other counties, but not specific as far as individual felony cases.
Yeah, and I know they're all different. It's hard to get there. Yeah.
And on the next one, we're talking about comparison to other counties. So this, the last slide we just looked at counties that were over 100,000 in population, and this slide looks at all 39 Washington counties combined. So we are the fifth highest population county. We have the fifth highest felony filings. We also, our misdemeanor and juvenile criminal filings are also kind of in line with that. However, we're the sixth lowest in the amount spent per capita. So I think clearly we are out of line in a number of respects. One is the structure that we have here, and number two is the amount that the county is spending per capita on indigent defense.
All right. Ann earlier referenced indigent defense standards, and so I'll just touch on those briefly. All of these standards are available on the internet if you want to look at them in more detail, but if you look at them in detail, starting with Clark County standards, which were adopted by the then county commissioners, they generally focus on one area that Ann has just mentioned, the caseload of attorneys who are handling indigent defense. You may have recalled that there was some litigation in some counties about attorneys who were simply completely overwhelmed by the number of cases that they were handling, and it was completely unrealistic to think that they can do a quality job with the number of cases. So that's been one of the focuses of indigent defense standards, is to set some ceilings on the number of cases that an attorney could handle.
I'm
sorry.
The Clark County Superior Court indigent defense standards were created by whom? By what group? In 2002?
There was various committees that we had consisting of judges. I knew I was part of the committee on that.
Okay.
And we sat down with the prosecutor's office, defense attorneys, and the county, and the statewide standards. And one of the main things we focused on was how many cases. I think it was 150 cases.
Correct.
Per attorney. And that's what we're concerned about.
And that did take into consideration Supreme Court standards.
They were adopted, yeah. The Supreme Court did adopt it along the same lines.
Until 2012.
Yeah, we kind of jumped ahead of them on that.
So you...
Always been progressive.
You were ahead. You were out in front.
Yeah, but we had complaints about the caseload that the defense attorneys were handling.
Do we have current standards, or are we simply incorporating collectively the standards from?
Well, you can see from the dates that it's been something of an evolution over time.
Yes.
And the state Supreme Court did not adopt standards until 2012, although they were much under discussion in the meantime. And there were comments made. They require publication and then comments. And so there was quite a history of looking at numbers and so on. But in addition to the actual numbers, which has played a major role in Ann's work to make sure that the contracts do not exceed those numbers, the standards tend to focus on such things as experience, mentoring, training, compensation, the assistance of investigators and other staff, and overall, one might say, to turn something that had been a more ad hoc system into that of professional attorneys who have training in individual in indigent defense, are interested in that field, and are adequately compensated to remain in that field. And again, they are all available if you wish to spend more time looking at those. I did that for a while last night and decided you didn't want to hear all the details of those. So the next slide is one that really has some important information in it. And it was mentioned earlier that David Carroll, the executive director of the Sixth Amendment Center, which frankly I was not familiar with, I think it's fairly recently established, the Sixth Amendment being the right to counsel under the United States Constitution, came to speak with us to our committee through Ann's arrangement and some longtime familiarity, I understand, with him and his work. Counselor Bolt was present when he spoke. He provided us with a written statement that touched on some of the features of Clark County's system. He was not, as I understand, a paid consultant. We had this committee instead of going the route of hiring a paid consultant. But the information that he provided in consulting with us, I think, was really invaluable and raised the process, I think, to another level of looking not only at county and state standards, but also at national standards that the Sixth Amendment Center focuses on. And some of the issues that he particularly mentioned are highlighted here. These are American Bar Association Principles of Public Defense, that defense counsel are supervised and systematically reviewed for quality and efficiency according to nationally and locally adopted standards. An individual contract system is much more difficult to try to supervise and make sure that the work is being carried out in a detailed manner. He talked about at least one state where they have basically independent contractors, but they also have supervisors who are hired for the specific purpose of supervising a certain number of independent contractors. Ann has done her best to bring professionalism as the Indigent Defense Coordinator, but it certainly was not a part of her job to supervise all of those attorneys. It would be an impossible task considering the numbers. And he spoke to us about this recommendation that where a caseload is sufficiently high, the public defense delivery system is best served by consisting of both a defender office, we've already talked about the professionalism involved in that, and the active participation of the private bar. So since we were looking at a contractor system, historically a public defender system, bringing that to the table and saying this is actually an excellent route to go that would accommodate both the experience we have in the community as well as establishing a public defense system would be an excellent route to follow. And then this third point that's raised here, there is parity between defense counsel and prosecution with respect to resources, and defense counsel is included as an equal partner in the justice system. This is something that I touched on briefly earlier, that there needs to be respect, if you will, and professionalism among the defense bar. And when you talk about parity, you're not necessarily talking about the total budget of the prosecutor's office, which performs a number of different functions, with the total budget for indigent defense. You're talking about on a comparable, where you look at what individual attorneys are able to receive in the way of compensation and so on, that there be more parity in terms of the overall compensation that is afforded. Next slide talks about the work group conclusions, and I'll ask others here if they wish to add in on this as well, since it is quite important. The absence of previous increases in compensation has already been discussed. The difficulties of there was really kind of a perfect storm, I guess you could say, of attorneys retiring and moving to other areas and so on, that some of our long-experienced attorneys were leaving. Some of those attorneys even date back to the public defender office prior to 1980. Interesting to note, Art Curtis himself was a member, the former prosecutor was a member of the public defender's office, so you can see the quality of people who arose from that office. And we were not getting, or at the time I was involved, Anne was not getting replacements who had the experience and the qualifications that were now required by those standards that we already put up on the board. You can't just grab an attorney and say, okay, you're defending felonies today, because they need to have the experience and training. The need there was established, and then the recommendation. I must say that I think I was as surprised as anybody, given the issues that we were dealing with, that we would be able to, in the committee, to come up with a recommendation. We had excellent, I think, input from various segments of the bar. Mark Minster, who's in the back, sought input specifically from private contractors and reported those in the committee. With all of the information that was received, and we found that this recommendation would provide adequate coverage, adequate recruiting. I think there's an intangible there that people will be interested in applying to a public defender's office in a system that can attract from various schools and so on. Heather might be able to say more about that, about how she ended up working in a public defender's office. It's an area that tends to attract highly qualified applicants. Hopefully would retain experienced attorneys either in the public defender's office or moving to a private contractor later, which oftentimes is the case. And that there would be adequate supervision and mentoring within the community. It would be contemplated that there would be more opportunities for training, seminars, that kind of thing, within a hybrid system such as this. So those were the conclusions. I don't know if any of the others wish to comment on those conclusions. All right, yeah.
So this slide is one that you saw at the work session that we had in the conference room. It's just updated for, I believe the work session was in August, so I've just provided it with the update with the caseload that occurred from August until December that we had to cover. And just quickly, this was the level at which we had contract coverage, and this is where the caseload was. In the interest of time, so that you have time to ask questions, I've also provided the prosecuting attorney's felony filings, because he had provided that graph to you at the prior, or at the board time before.
So Anne, I got a question. Mm-hmm. Sorry, back on the slide before this one.
Okay.
Yeah, so the 2017 contracts versus the 2015 and 2016 average workload, is that just a function of availability of attorneys?
No, it's the difference is as far as coverage.
I'm just wondering why the 17 line is so much lower than the 15 and 16 average workload line.
Well, the 2017, I'd get up except for the microphone.
That's okay.
But the 2017 workload is up here.
Right.
And this is what our contracted workload was.
Okay, that was okay. And that's so is that a function of the attorneys that are available then? The contracts that are, I guess maybe I'm confused, sorry.
And this is the workload. This was the contracts.
Okay.
And
okay.
So we pieced together, we band-aided together,
okay.
Filling that gap between available contract workload and the actual caseload workload.
Mm-hmm.
Contractors stepped up and took many, many,
okay.
many more cases. We put out a new request for qualifications and came up mm-hmm. with two newer attorneys who we put into the rotation.
Okay.
So we pieced it together.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And my recommendation for us would that we be that we move toward, because we've talked already about what the recommendations of the work group are, so perhaps we could go to slide 20 and walk through this hybrid system that at least the work group would recommend to you. And obviously there will be further discussion. This is not a formal request. So this is the thinking of the work group. And the hybrid consists of two parts. One would be a full-time exclusive attorney office, and the work group was, there is clear consensus and belief that a public defender office should have no more than 50% of the felony caseload. Perhaps 5 years from now, if there were a public defender office, there might be full-time attorneys who represent children who are abused and neglected because indigent defense currently pays for attorneys. But the work group is clear that this is not, our recommendation is not 50% of the felony caseload starting in 2019-20, and that'll increase over time until it's a large public defender office. And so in the interest of time, again, I'll just move forward as far as this organization chart was beefed up, quite frankly, as a result of the work group members who have more recent experience, like Heather and current experience, and Therese, as far as the support services. And that's why you will see investigators and more legal assistant type of support. So to the actual cost of what this work group is recommending, the public defender component, because we would have attorneys taking the same caseload as the contractors have, and the original proposal I had to the council was for only three attorneys, they'd be assuming some of the caseload. The proposal is no longer budget neutral, and it's no longer budget neutral because we've added the additional support services plus one other component. It's called a docket attorney, and what it does is mimic how the prosecuting attorney's office handles some of the more routine court appearances, much more efficient. That's what I'm most familiar with from my Oregon days, and so that costs some additional money and the bottom line. And this is all of these numbers are biennial costs. For the public defender component, it would be an additional $641,000 for 2 years. For the private attorney contractors, Therese.
Okay, thank you. So having just seen Hamilton, I tried to put this to wrap, but I cannot. So, but this will be a fun part of the fun in the sense that it'll really throw some facts at you. Can you imagine doing a full-time independent contractor or independent contract with the county full-time, you bring home pre-tax dollars, $5,600 a month pre-tax. And out of that, you pay, we are individually responsible for our office space, our assistants, our equipment, our paper, our ink, our training, our continuing legal education benefits that are mandatory to keep us abreast of the ever-changing law, and our medical and liability insurance. So what does that leave for take-home? So then you've got, I'm sure this question has to have bounced around all of your heads, why in the world do we do it? I've been practicing for 33 years, and I continue to do it. And the reason is because I, along with most of the other 100% of the rest of the contractors, do it because we believe in the criminal justice system. There are huge, huge consequences to our clients, huge consequences. And I'd like to just take a few minutes to discuss that with you so that you understand the gravity of what we do. And I would submit that with every increased consequence to our clients, there is increased exposure to the county for screw-ups. So if you want to keep a talent pool here, which obviously all of us want, we want a well-working criminal justice system that has parity, you've got to up the compensation. Passion only goes so far. I mean, we have... We talk about the graying of the bar. I rip food out of my children's mouth to make sure that my hairs don't turn gray. But the bottom line is that you have a lot of talent out there, but it's just, frankly, getting absurd with regard to the compensation, given what we need to pay for out of that. However, private contractors are, like I said, we have a good pool out there. To give you an idea of where we have talked about doing a hybrid system and how it could work without you know, sending the county into a financial tizzy, the increase just to bring current private contractors up from 2009 with inflation to starting in 2019 to bring up the case per case fee would be the $490,562 per biennium to just do inflationary increases. That's no increase for merit, no increase for seniority, and no increase for any other merit-based compensation.
Is that number for all, if we were to say 100% contractor, or is that the number to increase for the 45% that would be remaining contract under your proposal?
The second, okay. The latter.
And then do we know with that number what that per capita expenditure would be? Like you had per capita expenditure, $11 and some odd cents. What would it be with this
model?
We
figured that out the other day.
It is.
It only goes up to like $13 per capita.
$13.
We're still 30, way under.
We're still 34 cents.
About $1 per
cent. We would go.
And that's not just the inflationary increase. That would be the total. We calculated the total amount of money we're asking for per capita. It came out to about $13.50.
So this whole, yeah, okay.
Okay.
So
don't,
just
don't
a
quote me on that, but it's close to.
This is a hypothetical. I mean, this right. is ballpark.
So just as another hypothetical, if we were to just apply that inflation increase to the entire contract pool, you'd be looking at like $1,050,000, $1.1 somewhere around there?
You'd be looking at about about $1 million because it's about 50%. But
right.
with the public defender being only 45%. This is a ballpark where
yeah,
we're
yeah.
just
yep.
trying to
I'm
say.
Just yeah, trying to think of what the ballpark is.
Yeah.
For
the next slide has a total.
Okay, so also we're talking or proposing doing hourly rates on ISRB cases and persistent offender cases. And if I could just take a quick moment to explain to you what those are. ISRB stands for the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board. Back when the legislature put in determinate sentencing, in other words, standard range with a set determinate sentence to be imposed by the court, after a few years after that went into effect, it eliminated basically the parole board. The legislature then put in the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board as a hybrid sentencing mechanism. It's considered to be determinate sentencing plus, What that means basically is the judge does impose a determinate minimum sentence. Then the ISRB reviews a person as they're coming up on their release, and they have the authority to increase sentences in five-year increments up to life. Up to life. So there are 16 different crimes that are currently on our books that are ISRB types of cases. They're all sexual crimes. But essentially, you have contractors or attorneys handling cases for $2,250 when a person is looking at life in prison. If they are eventually released from prison, they are put on community supervision or placement for life. It is a tremendous amount of consequence, and one in which it does open the doors to exposure for both the attorney and the county if the case is not handled correctly by a person that has a sufficient amount of training and experience. So the way to address that is to take those types of cases out of flat fee and put them on hourly. There would be certain caps on that, which could be addressed later. And lastly, persistent offenders. It's another category separate from ISRB types of cases. There are over 60 crimes that are currently persistent offender crimes in the state of Washington. It's the two strikes, three strikes, you're out. Most of us are familiar with three strikes. If you have two prior convictions for serious violent type of crime and you get number three, you are sentenced to life in prison, no possibility of release. You're just sentenced to prison. So those persistent offender cases are akin, if not more serious, than homicide cases. We currently pay homicide cases on an hourly basis. This is simply a remedy or a fix to recognize the significance and severity of those types of allegations and compensate the defense attorney accordingly. The two-strike law, I'm just bringing this to your attention because some are surprised by it. A few years back, the legislature decided to make two strikes you're out on sex offenses. So if you were convicted at a very young age of a sex crime, and later in life you get convicted of a second one, and we're not talking about murder or mayhem, we're talking about sex cases, which have been, you go to prison for life. So the laws have changed to change the nature of the type of work that contractors do. And it is because of the sheer number of filings, more attorneys are having to be involved in those types of cases. So what I think is being proposed is not only to change those to hourly rates, but also attract a pool of attorneys who specifically want to handle those type of hourly cases, keep them up on the training, and have an institutional sense of camaraderie between those attorneys that are handling the persistent offender and ISRB cases.
Could I just add that we're kind of to the end of our time allotment, and I wanted to make sure that the counselors had time to ask questions, if there may be some give and take, if that was possible.
I just have a quick question about that. When you said young people commit these sexual crimes, are you talking about juveniles that maybe do and have that on their record?
So juvenile, if you are prosecuted in the juvenile system, it does not count as a strike offense.
Okay.
But if you are, some of those are
juveniles.
But if I could address that, many of us have experienced cases in the past few years where you commit a crime as a 13-year-old and you're not charged until you are an adult. The statute of limitations on these crimes is up to the age of 30 for the victim.
Yeah.
So then it becomes an adult crime.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of adults out there who have strike one for crimes they committed when they were children.
And actually, knowing just enough to be dangerous, some
right.
of those are...
Right.
Really not that serious. I mean, you know, crimes are serious. I'm just saying that I have heard of
there
some of these.
Degrees.
That I have heard
no,
of some of these crimes.
Range.
Yes, there is a range. Right.
Yeah.
So I need to be careful about saying that. But
well, in the lifetime probation, the lifetime probation is like, it's not easy.
No,
it's almost like electronic home confinement, even after they're released for the rest of their lives.
Okay.
So what would be the, you know, now we have a lot of data and a lot of input, and I, you know, thank you all, and for the rest of you who are on the work group to bring this to us. What would be the next step if we were to consider what was presented today?
I believe the next step is consideration of this direction with the next year's budget, and working with the department head Bob and Ann, and possible input from the work group on more specifics. I believe I told the work group this: the budget that we're facing in the next year is we're challenged by it, and that I think a phase in of this direction is probably the most realistic approach. So it may not be the first year, we may not do everything, but to get to follow this direction, then let me back up a little bit. You know, there may be a discussion on the council in terms of you may disagree with the direction or maybe parts of it, and to clarify that, I think that would be best in as we move forward with the budget, and so we'll have a future conversation. A principle that was not talked about here but was very strong recommendation is that the two parts, the compensation and the staffing, that those should go together and should not be separated. To say, okay, we're going to go ahead and do the staffing and we're going to wait on the compensation is not acceptable.
That's good.
And the other, that we're going to go ahead on the compensation and not the staffing, that is also not acceptable, that these two concepts be implemented at the same time, at the same rate. So just those are some of my thoughts on possible directions.
So the question on that, I'm glad you brought that up, because if we did the public defender's office and nothing else, wouldn't fly.
No.
But can we do a little of the defender's office, or is how do we do a little of the defender's office?
My original proposal, I'll remember, was three attorneys. The difficulty is that if you start out small with the public defender office and you make the recommended compensation increases for the contractors, as Counselor, you pointed out, the cost of doing those compensation increase. It's not going to be $490,000 because you don't have the staff attorneys taking that other caseload away from the contractors. And that, I think, is a budget discussion, because if the county decided not to do at all the staffing, and again, the work group wouldn't recommend that at all, the cost is about the same, because you would be saying we're going to increase 100% of the workload covered by contractors, and the cost is about the same as what we have in the next slide, which is the grand total of 1.4.
Do we have what the inflation adjusted rate would become? So it's $800 now. We have like the total of that. What would that be on a per case basis?
I have that. I just don't have it here.
I think it was 900 and something.
900
and something. Okay.
I should.
Well, we have.
It was very close to a million.
We have a lot of work to do with regard to our budget, obviously, and but additionally, the fact that we're so challenged by this conversation, I think, is more work that we need to do with our legislature, and with the fact that this should be funded by the state,
absolutely,
not by our local taxpayers. So I believe this council is going to be very vocal in advocating for more support from the state level, so that we're not so strapped by this discussion of doing what's right by you and by our community. So.
And I agree that's probably going to be a factor, but we're way out from having the legislature introduce it and get it passed. I'm really focus to a large degree on budget impact. And I wonder if we could see budget scenarios, because it's hard to put all these pieces together here, and that if we do this, then we're here. If we do this, absolutely, then we're here. And I'm really interested on page 20, where it says Public Defender Office Organizational Chart. So this is not a chart of what exists today.
No.
This
no.
is a... So what this is a tentative proposal. And
I would say that a proposal is even a strong... It's an example of what it could look like.
It's an example of what... Well, I'd like to see a scenario including number of FTEs and at what level when we get to refining budget scenarios.
And just to speak to kind of where these staffing ratios came from, we talked a little bit before about indigent defense standards. So there are some indigent defense standards in the court rules which talk specifically about the experience that an individual attorney needs to have before they take certain kind of cases and the number of cases that they can take if they're doing indigent defense. There is another kind of standard that talks about what kind of staffing ratios you should have. Now, that's the one that's adopted by the bar. It's not actually in the court rules, but it talks about, you know, how many investigators should you have? What's the ratio? What's the ratio of paralegals? What's the ratio of supervisors per attorneys? And so that's kind of where we came with the ratio of staffing is from that bar standard. Because the indigent defense standards that are in the rule say that these caps, these case caps, apply when you're in a, you know, adequately funded, adequately supported office. And so what is that? Well, then you look to this kind of expanded standard that the Bar Association has adopted that talks about the ratios in an office. So that's kind of where the number of people came from. So.
And but back to the budget. We need to see some tentative proposals so that we can understand what the budget implications might be, because moving forward, this is never going to get cheaper. And if we look at increasing county staff, we're talking employment costs plus benefits. So we need to not make a decision that doesn't have a full grasp of budget impacts as it's implemented and where we end up in a couple of years.
Absolutely, Councillor Stewart, and you'll recall you and I met after the work sessions and the board time, and slide 20 with the what if we had a public defender office with these staff, and slide 21, which is the cost of the what if we had this office, are based on the same methodology the budget office and I use for the three attorneys. And the detail, not the PowerPoint, but the detail does have not only the FTE, but also their starting steps. In other words, where would the senior public defender at the top of the public defender's office, where would they start as far as salary? And that way we can build out biennia to come and build in assumptions, you know, if they stay forever, meaning 20 years, how much will that cost over time? And so we have that information.
So also the standards, I mean, the more standards we build in, we're going to have minimum standards. We'd probably hope to achieve greater than minimum standards because that'll prevent challenges down the road. So which standard would we use? Is there a gold standard for the standards for indigent defense? So to sort of have that incorporated into the picture, too.
Very good.
I just have a really quick, I don't want to belabor this, but if we are going to do some easing into this, we need to see what that is too. What do we mean by that? How many attorneys? how many staff, investigator, you know,
incremental.
That, yes. What are these increments? And in the meantime, I'm assuming then, if we're doing both pieces, that means that our contract work is actually going to be, we're going to have to do the cases, right, no matter what. And if we're doing these two pieces together, it seems to me that we'll be spending more on contracts until we have the entire office all up. So we kind of need to see how that works and how we ease that in and how long we expect for this to take, et cetera.
No, I understand.
And I would say I'm glad the two of you are here. Meanwhile, I think in 3 weeks, WASAC has raised the funds for litigation, and we're talking to a little firm that just did the McCleary decision. So we are going to pull probably the trigger and go to town for litigation this year. So
in
it
order
could
to
be
get
a,
state properly funded.
State funding.
The irony, if I may, is the bill that the legislature, and they actually had a hearing on, as far as a 10-year incremental taking over the county's costs, the first year 10% would have paid for what this work group is proposing.
And some of this planning might be a fair amount of time out. I hope we can get into it and get it done. But the fact that the contracted attorneys, we have not increased that amount in such a long time, that's something that needs to be remedied. And whether it's remedied immediately at the full amount, but if we're not paying market rate, it's no wonder people don't want the contracts. Okay. It's economic reality.
So what I've heard is to bring back options for phasing in this concept.
Yeah, very good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.